Hi, you are listening to the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. This podcast is for policymakers, governments, researchers, students, businesses, and anyone that is interested in conflict and development issues in Africa. On this podcast, we hear from experts from across Africa and the world. Your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa, will ask the questions you would want answers to. Michael Wangpa has an extensive experience spanning over a decade studying, researching, writing, and consulting on conflict and development issues in Africa.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa. Today we're going to be discussing Alzheimer's disease and the prevalence of dementia in Africa. I'm joined by three very special guests, Mrs. Olatun Williams, Professor Shola Oguniyi, and Dr. Ziegbe Ogide. Mrs. Williams is a trustee at the award-winning Gabby Williams Alzheimer's Foundation based in Nigeria, and also the founder of Sponsor a Child Foundation, amongst many other achievements. Professor Shola Oguniyi is a world-renowned neurologist and professor of medicine at the University College Hospital Ibadan, where he's recently retired from. And Dr. Ozeigbo Ogide is a family physician at the Lagos State University Teaching Hospital, LUT, where he specializes in on geriatric and Alzheimer. He's currently the head of the Triage Accident and Emergency Department at LUT. Dear all, I'm very excited to have you join me today. This is the first time we're having a panel of more than two on the podcast. I definitely look forward to an exciting conversation. So I'm going to start off the question. I'm going to start with Professor Oguniyi. Let me start with a broad question and ask, what is Alzheimer's disease and dementia? And are these two different? Are they distinct? Are they the same concept?
Thank you for having me. Dementia is the umbrella term for a clinical condition in which an individual loses cognitive ability, and this disability then affects daily functioning. So you have impairment in regular brain functioning such that the person is unable to function well and requires assistance with activities of daily living, like taking bath, dressing, feeding, and even recognizing relations. So that's the broad term of broad definition of dementia. Alzheimer's disease is a specific type of dementia in which you have some misfolding of protein in the brain, which then leads to deposit of some abnormal protein in the brain and manifests primarily with memory failure. And It's the most common type of dementia, affecting between two-thirds and about three-quarters of individuals with dementia globally, including in Africa. And that's the one that is raising a lot of concern, because the number of cases is increasing globally. So that provides the basis for this discussion on dementia. Of course, there are other types of dementia due to stroke, dementia due to degeneration in specific parts of the brain, frontal lobe or temporal lobe. And then we have dementia due to deposition of Lewy bodies in the brain. And we have the reversible dementias due to medical causes that can be reversed with treatment if started appropriately. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you did. Let me follow up on that. You did mention, you gave a number, you gave two-thirds in terms of the global. What is that in terms of numbers globally and specifically in Africa?
Usually we say that about 60 to about 75% of all dementia cases are due to Alzheimer's disease, and it's the same in Africa. In our Ibadan study, which I was involved with for about two decades, the proportion due to Alzheimer's disease was slightly higher, but more recent studies have shown that the figures closely approximate to what happens globally, which is about 60% to 75% of all cases of female.
Okay, that's fine. So I don't know. In when we look, Dr. Zigde, if I come to you, and look at Dr. Gide, if I look at the distribution of this, because again we've talked about in Africa, Africa is often called the continent of young, of you know, we have the youngest population in Africa, and then Alzheimer or dementia is more like associated with the elderly. How is this significant in Africa and in Nigeria particularly?
Okay, yeah, thank you very much, and thank you for having me. Like what Prof said, dementia still remains one of the major causes of neurodegenerative conditions, especially the elderly. However, it's important to mention that dementia or Alzheimer's is not a normal part of aging. So just to quickly separate that, for the fact that one is increasing in age doesn't mean that the person must end up having Alzheimer's or dementia. And like the question you asked about Africa, okay, Africa generally is being known that we have a very young population. However, due to improvement in the lifestyle, probably our educational status and exposure, there have been some little changes. Before now, when you talk about care of the elderly, it's something that is not really common. But recently, over the past one or two decades, the specialty of geriatric medicine, come up in Nigeria and even in Africa, is now a special interest in medicine. And a lot of studies have been going into that particular aspect of medicine. So we can't really say that Africa is really like a young country anymore. Even as our educational status is improving, our lifestyle is improving, many of us are now taking more care of our parents and all. So we are drifting a bit towards what happens in the Western world, even in terms of the diet. You know, before now, the diets that are common in Africa usually fresh food and freshly prepared food. But now we've switched into canned food and, you know, refined food and all that. So these conditions are increasing even in Africa and Nigeria. Thank you.
Very interesting. So you mentioned lifestyle. So you mentioned lifestyle and in terms of like the food we eat. And so let me follow up on that and say, how much does that contribute to this disease in Nigeria? Because you did mention, what has caused that shift from eating healthy to eating processed food? What are the things that have caused that shift towards that? Then again, that also can be an irony, because if I look maybe 20 years ago, the average lifespan in Africa was about 40. So I think that has increased now. So if you say that now we don't eat healthy again, and then the lifespan has increased, how do you resolve that? It seems to me that that's kind of like a paradox in those statements. I don't know if I got you right.
Okay, yeah, just to clarify that, what I mean is that we now take more care of our elderly. Okay, and because of that, there is a possibility of some of these conditions that are associated with old age, you know, to begin to manifest. So that's what I'm trying to bring out. However, when it comes to lifestyle has to do with our choice. But as we all know that in terms of exposure to toxins, maybe fumes, automobile fumes and all that, those things were not really common, you know, before now. And even industrial waste and every other things that are not as common as it used to be. So these exposures, some of them are carcinogenic. Some of them causes some mutations in the body, and some of these things can lead to changes that can result to some of these conditions that we'll talk about, even including dementia. Even though generally, when it comes to some chronic conditions, of which dementia is a part of it, our lifestyle, progressive lifestyle, what I mean by that is the way we live our lives from our youth into adulthood plays a major role.
Great. Let me come to Prof and follow up on what you said about Prof. You did mention you've done research over the last. I know you've done research, if not in the last 3 decades. And so, what is the breadth of what have research found out? Because my understanding from a layman perspective is usually dementia or Alzheimer is something that is natural, but from what Dr. Gide from his response, now it does show also that lifestyle can contribute to it. So how much does lifestyle or how much does a natural, maybe genetics, contribute to this from research that you've done in the last 3 decades?
Research has shown that we have interaction of genetic factors and environmental factors. And lifestyle will come under the environmental factors. Genetic factors account for about 5 to 10% of the cases. The important factor underlying development of heart disease is age. As people get older, they are predisposed to developing death of brain cells and degeneration of brain cells, and that can result in loss of cognitive ability and dementia. So that's number one. Age is number one. But there are some genes that have been incriminated as causing dementia globally. The one that has attracted a lot of interest and is related to diet is apolipoprotein E, called ApoE, and is linked with cholesterol, which is lipid in the diet. And it's been shown that those who have the E4 allele of that particular genetic factor are at increased risk of developing dementia. The risk appears to be lower in Africans than in Europeans and in Japanese, but the risk is there from our studies. And it's been shown that those without that particular gene, if they have increased level of cholesterol, they are at increased risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. So that's that one there. But there are a few lifestyle factors that contribute to developing dementia. Lack of physical activity, that is sedentary lifestyle, is one major factor that has been shown in recent times. Putting on excessive weight, obesity, which will also hinge on being inactive, is also been shown to be a risk factor for dementia. Certain diseases are linked with developing dementia, and they may be related to lifestyle. Hypertension is one. Diabetes mellitus is one. We have also mental health issues like depression, which is also linked with development of dementia. Another factor is lack of education. Poor education is linked with developing cognitive decline and possibility of dementia. And then isolated living in old age is also very bad, and we should avoid that. And as Dr. Osegbia said, pollution is becoming very important. And more recently, there's a Lancet commission that has been working on risk factors for dementia on a global basis. They've shown that visual impairment, poor vision in old age, and poor hearing in old age are risk factors for development of dementia. So we can put all this together. Currently, there are about 14 risk factors that have been shown to increase the risk of developing dementia, in particular Alzheimer's disease. And we must also remember that stroke is an important risk factor for dementia. And we have lots of stroke poorly managed in many places in Africa. And this will increase the number of individuals who may be at risk of developing this disease, dementia.
Okay. I'm going to come back to you and Dr. Gide. I'm going to come back to you on the wider policy. And Dr. Gide, I'm going to come back on the medical preparedness and what we'll do. But let me go to Mrs. I think we must just have lost her. I was going to go to Mrs. Williams, but I think we've but I've lost her there. Okay, I'll come back to her once she rejoins. Let me follow up. When you talk about all of these factors, so at the policy level, Professor Oguni, what is the government in Africa? When I say the government, it could be at the AU level, or you know, or maybe even at the sub-regional level, in terms of policy. How are they addressing? Is this top of the list when it comes to policy response in Africa?
Unfortunately, at the moment, not on top of the list at all. Many African countries do not have policies on the elderly, and particular dementia. Although we know that Nigeria is making efforts, we now have some documents that have been prepared. We're waiting for it to get approved and becomes a policy issue for Nigeria. And it will be broadly on the elderly, not really specifically on dementia. The initial notion why this has been so is because the population in Africa is relatively young. So disease of elderly are considered relatively unimportant. And also because many of them do not contribute to the economy at that stage. They are retirees and they're taking from the resources rather than contributing. So it's like they've not been given the priority that they deserve. But things are changing now. It's a global thing, and there's a global movement to raise awareness. Especially, we must thank the World Health Organization, Inter-Academy Panel, and all these other bodies that are raising awareness about the problems of dementia. And also, lastly, we have the Alzheimer Association, which is in the forefront of developing national and global interest in Alzheimer's disease and dementia. So all these efforts combined can bring about the needed change in policy towards taking care of the elderly. Like I said, Nigeria is making some efforts in caring for the elderly. There's a body put together as a national body headed by Dr. Omokaru that is putting together documents and also moving around advocating to ensure that there's policy change and there's movement towards giving care of the elderly the pride of place that it deserves.
Dr. Ogide, when you talk in terms of we all experience working with emergency people and working with the family, geriatric and all of that, in practice, we've heard Professor Oguni talk about, you know, the efforts made at a policy level. But in terms of practice, what is your own experience in terms of, let's say, the Nigerian case? How well prepared or how far have they gone in implementing some of this? What are the gaps that are still left?
Okay, thank you very much. To begin with, we all know that generally the mindset of the government towards healthcare is a bit poor and not encouraging. When you talk about the health allocation from the budget alone, it's far below what is expected or what was advocated by WHO. So in terms of our health, generally, it's not even being considered. There is not to talk of the health of the elderly. However, sometime in 2021, there was some move by the government to bring out a policy. There was actually a policy, a national aging policy, sometime in 2021. But what Prof said, that policy was just about the elderly, probably the care of the elderly and, you know, things surrounding the elderly. But there was no mention of Alzheimer's and dementia in that policy. So it's more or less like just talking about other aspects. Yeah, there's what is known as the geriatric giants, you know, issues that surround the elderly or problems of the elderly. So just looking into that. And one other problem is about policy in Nigeria and even some part of Africa. It's not just about bringing up policy. It's implementation of the policy. You will hear that policies have been on for years, but has it been implemented? Like I said earlier, the WHO recommendation for health, everybody knows it, even the Nigerian government knows, but have they implemented it? So there's actually something on ground that is ongoing, but in terms of Alzheimer's and dementia itself, as it concerns the elderly, there's just absolutely little or nothing that has been done concerning that. Then in terms of practice, speaking generally now, most individuals do not even take care of their health. Most persons that come to the hospital present to the hospital when there are already problems. Very few persons go to the hospital for routine checks. So even the elderly, it's when problems occur. So most of the elderly we see are elderly that probably presented with fall, elderly that presented with stroke, elderly that just that wandered out of the house, you know, just disappeared for about 2 days have been seen. So those are people that come, but just that bringing them to the hospital for routine checkup is very rare or is kind of absent. So I still feel that the knowledge about the importance of checkups in the population, the entire population, we're not even talking about the elderly now, even as a man, as a woman, just going to the hospital for checkup is very poor. So our health seeking behavior generally is very poor, and it's expected to even be worse among the elderly, because most of them are incapacitated. They need someone to even bring them, you know, to seek health care. So generally, in terms of policy in Nigeria, there's a policy that is lying down somewhere, but implementation is near nothing or zero. Thank you.
I agree with you. And I think I may have to ask some of the questions I was going to ask Mrs. Williams, because I don't think she's able to still join us. I've just reached out to him and she's having issues with connections. But she's told me that you're kind of both involved in the Gabby Williams Foundation. And one of the things you said, Dr. Ogide, right now is the health culture, the culture of seeking health. You said, let me use your health seeking behavior. And I link that to what Professor Oguni said about poor education in one of the risk factors that you mentioned. So when we look at the Gabby Williams Foundation and what it's doing in terms of advocates, how relevant is it in terms of changing the perception or in terms of advocacy or changing the behavior? How far can it go, and, you know, what is the relevancy towards this particular case?
Okay. Generally, most of these things, in terms of the health of the nation, it's supposed to be the duty of the government. But when you have a situation where the government has failed or is not living up to expectation, then the health of every individual lies in our own hands. And if we take it further, you will notice that in terms of the economic status of the country, majority of Nigerians are living way below the poverty line. So I had the opportunity of discussing with some persons, like person that came down with some emergency situation, to a specific stroke, that this thing could have been prevented by just taking your drugs. And they tell you that the money they have with them is not even enough to eat. Not talk of getting drugs. So when you look at all these things, it is kind of interwoven. And that means that we can't leave everything to the hand of the government. So in line with that, individuals and NGOs, you know, are expected to take up the baton and do some of these advocacy and some of this work to ensure a healthy government. For the Gabby Williams Alzheimer's Foundation, it's been on for some years now. They work more on the brain health of individuals, especially the elderly. But there are some other innovations that the Gabby Williams Alzheimer's Foundation have been involved in. There is the concept of the art for Alzheimer's. Okay, this just involves some corporate bodies where programs will be held. Individuals that have mild to moderate cognitive impairment are invited for such programs. you know, they're interacted with, classical music will be playing, just to make them happy. Another things that they do is collaboration with faith-based organization, probably in terms of free medical health and health promotion. There was one that was done early this year at the Redemption Camp, where all the senior pastors of the church, you know, they came together and they were told about brain health and Alzheimer. And it's really shocking to know that most persons don't even know there's a condition called Alzheimer's disease. Some don't even know there's anything called dementia. And some of the questions that were coming up then were really surprising, because some persons don't even take care of their other aspects of their health, like their cardiovascular health, their other aspect of their health. They don't take care of that. Then you now talk about the brain. You say, oh, you don't even check your BP, or they've not checked their blood pressure. It's the brain. You know, it doesn't really make sense to some of them, but we're able to, you know, let them know the importance of taking care of the brain. The brain is like the thermostat now of the entire body, what controls the higher center of the entire body. Then there are some other programs that we do in corporate places during breaks in these companies. We go there and we, you know, discuss with them, let them know things about their brain health. Then also, we also do things in televisions. Sometime in April, we had a segment at Channels TV. I think the topic then was Your Brain and You. These are Sunrise Daily, I think that's the program. So we had some discussion around dementia and Alzheimer's. So majorly is just about health promotion. Letting everyone know the importance of taking care of their brains and their brain health, importance of their brain health. And there's some other concepts that the Gabby Williams is involved in, is a 3D animation. Just do some, there are some short films that are available that they use to pass some of these messages. There was one of the short films, Waiting They Do, Mama Dupe, something like that, and several other short films, you know. And these films, they are not just done with Queen's English. Go as far as using the Pidgin English, because this condition is cuts across all cadres. All cadres. Professors can be affected by Alzheimer's. The market woman can be affected by Alzheimer's. So irrespective of the socioeconomic status of the individual, so they are, any person can be affected. So these are some of the things that the Gabby Williams foundations they are involved in, and the aim is just to ensure that the awareness of Alzheimer's and dementia and some of the sequelae, you know, are well known by everyone around. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think Mrs. Williams has joined us. So I would Miss Williams, can you hear me?
Yes, I can very clearly.
Yes, Dr. Ogir has done a very brilliant work.
Very clearly, I can hear you.
Yeah, so I would ask and say, how did Gabby Williams Foundation come about? What is the, and you as a person that has catered to someone, you know, I think catered to someone with dementia, what is your experience? You know, what is your firsthand experience with this disease? Mrs. Williams, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll wait for him to cover. Prof, let me go to you. I wanted to follow up on what Dr. Gide said. Because sometimes when we do research, you know, those research sometimes are not translated into, you know, practical, say maybe policy or even at the end user thing. How do you bridge, or have you bridged? Because I've seen where, you know, you've been involved also in the community based kind of, also your work with the Gabby Williams. How do you bridge that gap? How do we bridge the gap, or how have you bridged it in your years of practice, from research to policy and down to end user, and from following up on what Dr. Gide was saying in terms of the awareness and, you know, creating the awareness?
Yeah,
I think we must admit that there's always a gap between research findings and policy change. It's a universal thing. But in our situation, most of the studies that we carried out were mainly geared towards academic progress and care of people with dementia in communities, but doesn't translate much into national policy, which is unfortunate. And it's mainly because you respond to those who fund those studies and you give them the answers first. We don't spend a lot, sufficient amount on research from our part of the country. And so most of the studies that are carried out are geared towards academic progress, and then things percolate with time to change, bringing about change in society. We haven't done much in terms of implementation of most of our research findings. It's a gap, which is unfortunate, but we hope we're going to bridge that. Now, we are part of this Africa Dementia Consortium, and one component of that is community engagement. And you engage them at the beginning of the study, you engage them throughout the study, and you engage them at the end of the study to let them know what you've come up with. And we believe that with this new method, we'll be able to reach the community and bring about the much needed change. The Africa Dementia Consortium that I've described involves about 9 countries in Africa, and we're planning to extend it to about 12 and maybe later to about 15, 20. So by the time we do that, we believe that it will be an Africa-wide impact of research on dementia and Alzheimer's disease specifically, and looking at both genetics and the environmental aspects that affect disease development for preventive purposes. I think that's the position for now.
Okay, I'll come back to you, Prof. I think Mrs. Williams is back. Mrs. Williams, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, but I can't guarantee I'll be here for long. It just keeps on bringing me in and out.
We'll just try. I was asking what motivated the Gabby Williams. Tell us a bit about the Gabby Williams Alzheimer's Foundation and your practical experience catering to someone with Alzheimer's.
No, I didn't hear that question at all. It's all breaking.
Okay, the question is, tell us what led to the establishment of the Gabby Williams Alzheimer's Foundation and your practical experience catering to someone with Alzheimer's disease. Oh, we've lost it again. Prof, let me come back to you. You mentioned something very key about funding. Most of the things in Africa, most of our research, most of our even policies are kind of like externally driven in terms of like the funds, the finances, or even the motivations for doing this. If I look from the return to the Fourth Republic, look at Obasanjo's macro economics, even our extractive industries, stuff, they are always externally driven based on the funds to come. Now, what is the economic burden? And I'm also going to ask Dr. Gide the same question. What is the economic burden of responding to Alzheimer? What is the economic cost of it?
By going by calculations and publications, the amount of money spent on caring for individuals with dementia is very huge. And according to the WHO, it's going to approach about $1 trillion very soon. Most of this money is spent in the high-income countries. About 80-85% of that is spent in high-income countries. And that's because in those countries, they cost everything, indirect care, direct care, hospitalization, and all that. In our own society, caregiving is taken as part of family responsibility. And that's always something that we always take for granted, but should be costed. But when we do that, then it will be at least minimum of amount that we need to take care of a person with dementia. In a year, we'll come to about $10,000, calculation even says it's slightly higher than that. If you convert that at the current exchange rate, then that's a staggering amount. So it's a lot of money that is needed to take care of hours lost in looking after the person who is affected, to take care of hospitalization, to take care of home care needs and all that. Those are the direct and indirect costs that we put into consideration. And then to take care of the caregiver who is going to look after the individual with dementia. So it's a lot of money that we're talking about. So it's a huge expense that is needed to take care of an individual with dementia. And then you do it on a national basis, it's going to challenge our total GDP. And that's the reason why efforts should be directed at preventing the disease by identifying the risk factors and targeting them, rather than aiming to take care of individuals when they develop the disease, which is a global approach to managing any of these degenerative conditions.
Dr. Gide, let me follow up. Let me follow you up on that. As a family physician, and you know, hearing what Prophet said, that it is, you know, it's family responsibility. We take care of our elderly in Africa. I don't think they have care homes where they take elderly to. What is your experience? How many of the families that you cater for can afford hearing $10,000 per individual? You know, even the rich in Africa, Nigeria, this would be daunting. So, what is your experience addressing this? Who are the clients? Who are the families that are able to afford this care that you provide?
Okay, thank you very much. Like I said earlier on, geriatric medicine, in quotes, is looking like something that is relatively new. And when you have parents that require some of this home care, some individuals prefer that they be at home because of our cultural inclination. You know, you are, for example, let's say you are in Lagos and you have a house in Lagos and you are not taking your mom or your dad to a care home. You know, culturally, it's seen like something very, you know, very wrong. So whether you are available in person or all that, they just don't really buy into home care. However, there are some few good home care facilities, you know, around the country that actually coming up. And just to also add to what Prof mentioned in terms of the cost of care for a dementia or a patient with Alzheimer's, it cannot really be quantified because the cost is just beyond the physical cash. The time that is spent, the person that is having the condition possibly had to retire before the required time, for example, so there's already some loss there. The person has some dependents that is supposed to take care of. That is another loss there. The carer is someone that is possibly, let's say, a child, for example, that is taking care of the mom with dementia. That kind of person will miss work, you know, will miss family life and a lot of it. So when you add all these costs together, you know, it can't really be cannot really be quantified. So back to what you asked earlier, there is this apathy towards taking elderly to care homes. So most Nigerians or people in Lagos, they've not really bought into that idea. They don't really see the reason for it. And sometimes you may not really blame them because there's even a study that was done, I can't remember where now, that tried to compare elderly with dementia or Alzheimer's that stay with their families and those that were taken to care homes. And they found out that the lifespan of those that were taken to care home was a bit shorter, or you know, their outcome was a bit poorer. So when you look at everything put together, it's a bit dicey, you know, to really put the blame on, you know, the family for not taking their loved ones to care home and all that. But outside the country, I think it's just like a normal thing. Once from retirement, most of them go to care home, and the geriatric system outside the country in US and UK is well organized. You see geriatric homes that have amenities, swimming pools, games, and things like that. But these things are not really common in Nigeria. The few geriatric homes that I'll be just like a room and a city room where they just sit down and just watch TV and all that. You don't have recreational activities and all that. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I agree to you. Mrs. Williams, can you are you there? Are you able to put in some words?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
so
yes.
So the question is, how did Gabby Williams Foundation come about, and what is your experience, personal experience, catering to someone with dementia, Alzheimer?
It came about, and we started it on my father's birthday, his 80th birthday, on the 11th of September 2017, when he was already at the seventh stage, and we brought him to the celebrations because we discussed and debated and decided it was important for people to see the ravages of Alzheimer's. So we brought him to the celebration so people could see this once powerful, physical, intellectually brilliant sportsman to see the impact of Alzheimer's on such a man. So that was how it started. The actual day, my father's birthday, and we wanted to close the knowledge gap. Because when Daddy was diagnosed, we knew nothing. He was diagnosed in 2007. And my mother had to learn everything from the internet and books and so on. And she became a sort of expert in Alzheimer's. I was less so because I wasn't even living with them directly. But I sort of picked things up from her, things I should do, things I shouldn't do. But I realize now that I've been working in this space now, in dementia care for over 7 years now, that I knew nothing. Sundowning, I knew nothing. The different stages and what to expect, I knew nothing. So yes, we wanted to close the knowledge gap, which is why we built a network of experts like Professor Oguni, like Dr. Ziegwe Ogide. We have a few who can tackle Alzheimer's from every perspective, from the perspective of, you know, general healthy aging, brain health, what we can do to sort of put dementia at bay, how we can manage dementia. Oziegwe was just talking about the costs, the burdens of Alzheimer's dementia. We wanted to create a community, a sort of a fellowship of people suffering alongside the people living with dementia. Because they find themselves so alone. So we wanted to talk about the various burdens, the economic burdens, the emotional burdens, all the various burdens. Yes, someone living with chronic illness, bring.
We did talk earlier on about the importance of preventative approach, looking at the cost, vis-a-vis the cost of, you know, catering for someone like that. And we also talked about advocacy, the relevance of NGOs advocacy. So how is Gabby Williams Foundation faring in this space of advocacy and, you know, creating awareness among people of this?
We regularly host Q&A sessions. We do them online. We have them in person physically with all our experts, with caregivers in institutions, and also family-based caregivers. We've developed IEC materials, information, education, communication materials in Yoruba, in English, in Pidgin English. Even though it's a national charity, our main focus is Lagos State, which is my late father's focus. We have just launched, we work with faith-based organizations a lot, because that's where the people are, Michael. You know, we're religious people, Africans are religious, so if you want to really target a great multitude in one go, move into the mosque, move into the churches. So we work with faith-based organizations, and we've now just recently launched the Brain Health in the Corporate Structure Initiative, which aims at encouraging our tireless Nigerian executives to take better care of their brain health. Human capital is the biggest asset in the corporate structure, and your brain is the biggest asset you have. So we've developed retreats for our executives, like one afternoon retreat or full weekend retreats, where we get people to come in, like Dr. Oziegwe, to come in. We have dance, properly choreographed dance. We have also like a chess master going to come in to play chess. to stimulate mentally stimulating activities and also well-being activities like dance, like visual art practice in a very gentle way. So we do a lot of advocacy work. We've got these 2D infomercials, Michael, speaking, where one is in Pidgin English, Waiting They Do, Mama Dukwe. Another one is more general Nigerian English, Remembering Tomorrow, A Lesson at an Obalende Buka, where we introduce the MED lifestyle, the acronym for managing your exercise regimen, your diet, your sleep, and your stress.
Okay, that's quite interesting. I was going to come back to Dr. Gid and Professor Gude, but let me start from Prof. It is important that the government alone can't do this. The government, even if you come to the advanced world here, you see that there's always that partnership between the government and private institutions where they do that. So how do you see this moving forward? How do you see, in terms of, okay, let me put this question. So this is going to be the last question. So I want each one of you to just have a summary and look at one. What is project where we're going to go maybe in the next 5 years, to 5 to 10 years of with this disease, in terms of like numbers and in terms of the treatment, in terms of awareness, and in terms of like the policy level where it is right now, and with the level of advocacy that Gabby Williams is doing, where we see the impact we're going to see in the next 10 to 20 years. So I just want each one of you to go, starting from Prof, to just end the podcast with that.
My projection is that things will get better. We know that the knowledge base is increasing. People are becoming more aware. Experts in geriatrics are also increasing. The general notion is that help can be obtained in these special facilities, and there are people who are trained. Believe that with our approach to prevention or preventive strategies, we'll bring down the numbers of cases. Otherwise, the projected increase in cases would make a mess of our health resources. So we need foundations like the Gabby Williams to support, to keep doing what they are doing to promote brain health, and ensure that there's increase in knowledge about dementia. And with regards to policy, I think the Nigerian government has started. We hope that things will be implemented. The gaps that are there in implementation will be met, and it will be an African-wide initiative to increase our knowledge about dementia and Alzheimer's disease in particular. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome, sir. Welcome to you, Dr. Over to you, Dr. Gide.
Okay, yeah. Thank you very much. For me, I see that there's hope. The knowledge has increased. A lot of persons are now beginning to know about dementia, and the advocacy itself has also increased. My only concern is at the policy level. The policy on the national aging policy does not really fully capture dementia and Alzheimer's. Possibly, if there's room for some modification of the policy, that would be a very good one. And beyond that, even the national aging policy, the implementation itself is another thing that can be done from the government aspect. But from the individual aspect and from the aspect of other NGOs and other organizations, I would say that there's a glimmer of hope for the future. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, you're welcome. Unfortunately, I think we've lost Mrs. Williams, but I'm glad we're able to get her to at least to give us some of her insights. I'm glad we did capture that. So it's been a very, even for me, it's been an eye-opening episode. Mrs. Williams, are you? Oh, I think we have a. Can you hear me, Miss Williams? Can you hear me?
No.
Oh, I think she's just joined us. Are you there? Can you hear me? Oh, she's not there. Okay, I thought we might be able to get her to give some concluding closing statement. But Mrs. Williams?
Maybe you could do a special session with her, just the phone.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I said to her, maybe I'll have to do a special session where she will talk more about. Yeah. But anyways, dear all, I'm very, very happy and pleased to have you join. This is a very rich, rich insight. Prof, I appreciate your insight. Dr. Gide, this is, I appreciate your perspective on this. And hopefully we were able to share in your optimism and hope as well. And hopefully with things like this, we're able to share this knowledge or this need to the public, and people are going to be able to see that can influence. Because one of the things we do at the center is to bridge the gap between research and knowledge, and to be able to provide evidence-based, influence evidence-based policy. So yes, I'm so grateful for your time. Thank you very much, and I'll keep posted. Thank you very much.
Thank you so
Have
much.
A lovely day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you for tuning in today to a wonderful session, one of a kind, and one of the first that we've done. I'm having three panels, and I apologize for some of the technical glitches that we had with one of our guests. But it was a very rich and insightful episode where we've discussed Alzheimer's disease and the prevalence of dementia in Africa. I implore you to join me next episode for another enriching episode. For now, stay blessed, and don't forget to subscribe to the channel if you want to get or listen to more exciting episodes. Take care for now.